Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Perinatal Safety Collaborative conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Ms. Terry Straub. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, operator, and thank you, everyone, who have joined on the call. Hope you all had a good holiday and Happy New Year. Today is, again, similar to the last conference call in that there's still a lot of catch-up to do to make sure that we have all of the information we need so we can move forward on to the next steps and scheduling future training sessions. So first, I'd like to follow up on the status of the safety climate survey. Hillary had sent out to everyone a data collection form to find out the total number of surveys that hospitals would be distributing. And those surveys should go to all of your perinatal staff, including private attending physicians. So that number will serve as the denominator. Some hospitals had questions how to break up or identify and number some of the surveys so that they could assure every staff member has submitted them. What one hospital has done is they have color-coded the surveys so that the physicians get one color, nurses get another color, and then they're just numbering the surveys and sending them back to us. But we're still missing quite a number of surveys, even the initial round of surveys from hospitals. And since this is a collaborative experience, all hospitals should be getting the information in a timely manner, because if one hospital delays in getting the information in, it only impacts all the other hospitals in the collaborative as far as collating all of the results and getting reports back to the facilities. So we're really going to be making individual calls over the next week, speaking to individual hospitals if you have not submitted the surveys at all, and if you have, to increase your sample size, because we are certainly nowhere near 100% sampling, which is not a sample, 100% survey response from the hospitals. And we are very practical. We recognize that we will not get 100% of the staff completing the survey, but we do want to get the numbers up to a good amount so that we could have a fair assessment of what's really going on in the hospital, and we can begin to gauge improvements based on survey responses in the future. So that said, I'd like to open up the lines for any questions on the survey, and I just want to, before I do that, point out that Hillary Jalon from United Hospital Fund is also on the line, and Lorraine Ryan from the Greater New York Hospital Association. So we're all available to answer and speak to any questions you may have. So, operator, if you could open up the lines for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone.
No questions?
I'm showing no questions at this time.
Good. That's great. Okay. Also in line with playing catch-up, we're still waiting for applications from a number of hospitals. Bellevue, Harlem Hospital, Queens Hospital Center, New York Presbyterian, and Jacoby, North Central Bronx, and Trinitas. Applications are still outstanding, and we really do need to receive them so that we have a firm commitment and we have an exact number of hospitals that are participating in the, and also Winthrop, in the collaborative. People often ask us how many hospitals are in the collaborative. We're being asked when we deal with Med-Mal reform or at the state level, and right now I'm not really comfortable giving an exact number. I know how many have come to the training and how many have said their application is on the way, but it's now over 2 months into this process, so we really do need you to get the applications to us, and we're happy to walk through the application process with you or help get you to complete that application if that's at all helpful.
Or we can send another,
one to you if you don't have a good, a more recent copy of it or have it available. Does anyone have any issues with the application, or can you let us know if it's will be coming shortly and when we can anticipate getting the application. Again, this is in fairness to everyone who has already completed their application and would like to move forward with additional training. Any comments, operator? Could you just open up the line?
One moment, please. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. I'm showing no questions at this time.
Questions, no comments. All right. So it is a new year. I hope everyone can get re-energized and refocused on this initiative. So I'm going to move on to the worksheet tracking progress report. And maybe, Hillary, you could speak to that a little bit?
Sure. And actually, one of the things that Terry just talked about with the safety climate survey is on this, and really we really need to know what the response rate is. So it's really important that you get this to us. We've gotten a few back, and some of you have called us with some questions. Really the purpose of the sheet, just like we said at the last meeting, is to track the progress with perinatal safety activities and who's doing what. You don't need to give us, we really don't want the clinicians and the staff names on the worksheet. That's just for your internal purposes. We got a great one back today where they just put kind of like an initial on that part, but just to keep it, they kept it completely anonymous, and they put check marks in each box as to which topic and which area is being done or has been accomplished within the specific hospital. So that's really, we're really not looking for any names. That's just for your internal tracking purposes. We just want to know numbers. So how many physicians, nurses, et cetera, have been given the safety climate survey, because we need to know denominators for that. How many, and then as another, for instance, how many physicians, nurses, et cetera, are involved in specific drills? How many physician, nurses, et cetera, are involved in interdisciplinary rounds? And this sheet is for you to continually track who's doing what at your hospitals. So we haven't gotten a lot of them back. We asked for them back by this conference call, and I'd say we've gotten probably about a little over half a dozen back, and we really think that this will help to organize the different components of the collaborative. Anything else that I'm missing, Terry or Lorraine?
No, any questions on how to fill this out or any problems?
We'll ask them. I'll just tell you one problem that someone called about yesterday was it's just the whole name. They asked, well, do we need to submit the names of clinicians to you? And the answer to that is an absolutely no. We don't want that information. That's for your internal purposes. So, operator, are there any other questions about the sheet?
We do have a question from Ann Shea Lewis from, one moment, please. Your line is open.
Thank you. Hi. I have an issue with, I did submit my form, but I did not put any information on the safety climate survey because initially we were told they were anonymous. We did not code them. We made them available to everyone, and what I sent you back was probably less than two dozen, which certainly was not everyone. I know for a fact two of the people who responded on the safety climate survey were physicians. The balance were registered nurses. And that's about all I have. And I don't know who did and who did not because we did it anonymously. We didn't track it with any number, and that's the only way they would do them.
Right, and that's fair, Ann. Some hospitals just wanted to track it because they wanted to keep track internally. Our goal here is only to know what the denominator is.
Exactly.
But I guess your challenge, what hospital are you from, Ann?
St. Charles.
For you to pursue the individual attendings and maybe have a letter from the CEO to the attendings, attach the survey when they come on the unit. Maybe some of the nurses could ask them and engage them in filling out the survey. And they can put it in a sealed envelope and send it. You know, you can just send all the sealed envelopes to us, whatever way you want to do it, but it is a challenge. We never said it would be easy. It's to get as many surveys back as possible. Do you have any thoughts or suggestions that we could help you with getting more surveys?
No, I suppose we made them available at the department meeting. We've been talking about it. The department director's aware of it. They were on the unit. The nurses were asking them to fill them out. I'm telling you, we got two. I did not ask the CEO to write a letter to them all and say, here, please fill this out and send it back. I suppose I can try that. I don't know that.
Before you do that, what you might want to try is actually having them completed at a department meeting, collect them at the end of the meeting.
We did. We did try that and didn't get any.
You didn't get any.
No. Well, we got two. So we got two. And the ones that we got back on the nurse's station were all indicated that they were registered nurses as opposed to physicians who were.
Okay.
So.
Mm-hmm. Well, would it be helpful for everyone on the call if we were to put together a very short letter, a template for you to give to the CEO?
That would help.
All right.
We can do that.
Thank you.
Thanks for that feedback, Ann.
With regard to the worksheet, does anyone have any questions about how this is to be completed and how often? It says regularly beginning on January 8th.
Right.
I'm not sure.
So basically we wanted the baseline information on January 8th, so we would have had it for today's conference call. So that's a one-time baseline. And as you update it on a monthly basis, if there are updates, to resubmit it to us prior to each of the conference calls. Every 2 weeks. So as you have an update, just continue to use this as a worksheet for you. So it's work in progress. And my gut is that most of this information, once you do it one time, there'll be very little to update. As people have training, then it will come in waves, each of the updates.
Right.
Any other thoughts on it, Hillary?
No, the only other thing, to make it easier, what we could do is if there are updates, if you want to submit this sheet with your monthly team report, and then you can just get it all out of the way at once to us.
Any questions on this worksheet? Do you want to go through it? We can go through it again.
Sure.
We go through it column by column and you could just let them know what they can delete because it is in an Excel file.
Right, okay. So we first ask, obviously, for your hospital name and the contact completing the form, just in case we have any questions about it, and then which month you're giving this to us. And then the columns include, and again, this is just for your internal use, the first name and the last name. You don't have to give that to us. We do want to see the discipline, though, so that we can track who's doing what, if it's a nurse or a physician or a nurse practitioner or a midwife, et cetera. We also ask you for the title. Again, not as necessary as some of the other columns, though. And then we ask you if the employee is full-time, part-time, per diem, or agency. So you could just fill that in. And again, we want to see, is there a difference between what the employee is doing if they're full-time versus part-time. Then we ask for the shift, day or night, and we have been getting a lot of that information on the ones that we've been giving back. And then we have specific columns for each component. So we have a column for the safety climate survey, and right now the only column that we would want filled out is the initial, because that's the only – we've only – obviously asked you to administer the safety climate survey once. And then next time we do, if and when we do follow-ups of the safety climate survey, there's two different columns for those, follow-up one and follow-up two. But for now, you don't have to worry about those columns. Then we have a column for electronic fetal monitoring certification, and if you could include an approximate date that this specific employee or clinician received the certification. And then we have a column for team training. We have the first column within this section is the Michael Fox, Michael Leonard, which is more of an introductory training, so not ongoing, but that introductory training that we had on October 16th. So if the staff person went to that. And then we have another column because obviously we know a lot of you are doing your own team training internally, so we want to know what are you doing, what is that team training, and who is involved. And then we've also encountered that many of you are doing drills, So we ask you, there's a specific column on filling out what drills you've done and then which type. So if it's a hemorrhage drill or whatever you're doing, if you could check off which clinicians are involved in that. We put three columns for that. And then finally, we have a column for interdisciplinary rounding, and the hope is to have this two times per shift, and which staff members and clinicians are involved in interdisciplinary rounding at your hospitals.
Whether or not they're doing it.
And whether they're doing it. So any, I guess maybe we should one more time see if there's any questions since we went over those.
If you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. And we have a question from Davina Santos from Montefiore Medical Center. Your line is open.
Yes, regarding the last speaker who actually was having a hard time getting the surveys in, I was experiencing similar difficulties but I did identify a member of our secretarial staff that has a very strong influence on the attendings. And I gave her the task and gave her the list of the attendings, the names, and she's the one that usually takes care that we have our immunizations, you know, the paperwork is accomplished and stuff like that. And it's amazing how she was able to get everybody. So I think maybe for that physician who was talking earlier, that would be a suggestion I have, that you may find somebody that is very persuasive in your department to do that. So, just food for thought.
That's a great suggestion.
Great.
And that's really what these calls are about, sharing ideas and experiences so that we can learn from each other. Thank you. And if anyone else has any good suggestions, we would appreciate it.
You know,
question, please press the 1 key.
Terry, just one other. Someone else was talking to me, and they gave as a suggestion to feed them, take them in a room and give them lunch or something, describe what the survey does, and just get them to fill it out right then and there. And I heard that worked at one of the hospitals in the collaborative, too, if they're on the call and want to share that.
That's great. Food always seems to be one of the answers.
Lorraine? Are there any questions?
I'm sure no questions at this time.
One other very short, and then I think, you know, hopefully we're not exhausting you with asking you for information. We're going to send out a very short email to the contact at each of the individual facilities. We need to get sort of behind some of the information we're asking for. We want to know more about what kind of fetal monitoring certification training programs you have in place, whether you use a vendor or you use a homegrown product. So we're going to be sending a very short email to yes, no, but more than that, if you have materials like codes of professionalism, standardized documentation forms, we want to start to amass this material so that we can go through it and assess what's working, what's not. You know, we might have a follow-up phone call with individuals, but I just want to prepare you for just, you know, yet another request for information, but hopefully at some point this will dribble off and we won't continue to ask you constantly for these things. We are trying to work in concert with you to minimize the requests, but we need to better understand when you say yes to a question, yes, we do fetal monitoring strip certification, what does that really mean? What's the product that you use? How often do you administer the program? Is it required for credentialing, et cetera? So I just wanted to warn you to expect yet another email request, and that will go to the Perinatal Safety Collaborative contact only. It will not be going to the CEO. It will go to one person. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. And we recognize that this is a lot of information, but this is the growing pains of a collaborative, bringing many organizations together and then trying to really figure out what the landscape is in regard to practices, training, education, staff understanding, so that at some point we can move everyone so everyone's on the same page and we can identify what systems actually work best for different types of organizations and what systems could use improvement. So we, again, thank you for your patience as we move forward. Any other comments, Hillary?
No, not about the updates. I guess the only other thing we did send out was the grid that shows just some of the information that we got from the applications.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone received that when we sent out this the notice about this meeting.
Great. Okay, next we're moving on to data collection, and this will probably be a painful process as we move forward. I know we've talked a little bit about it on past calls, and many of your hospitals are collecting different types of data elements. But what I thought we could do is go through some potential outcome measures and then some trigger tool measures. Hillary did send you a copy of a couple of trigger tools. And then talk about what would be the most beneficial measures for us to begin to collect from you without creating a huge burden. So just starting with potential outcome measures, under maternal measures, there are measures looking at maternal death, maternal ICU admissions, uterine rupture, hysterectomy or fourth degree perineal lacerations. So I'd like to just open up the lines, and maybe, operator, we could open up all of the lines, but before we do that, I would just request everyone to put your phones on mute if you do not have music in the background, and then we could have some type of discussion to begin talking about the measures. If you are collecting data, we would love to hear what data elements you are collecting, and we would love you to be able to share some of your data collection tools with you and how you collect it. Is it concurrent review while the patient is in the hospital, which is ideal, or is it retrospective? And we're really going to be pushing for some concurrent review, but we want to be respectful of the time commitment that you would need to collect that data. So, operator, would you be able to open up the lines? We'll try it. If it gets too noisy, we will have to close the lines and then take individual questions. But sometimes having all the lines open allows for a much more meaningful discussion.
Okay, ma'am. All lines are open. And if you do not have a self-muting feature on your phone, you can press star 6 to mute your line.
Okay. Hello? Who's speaking?
The hysterectomy patient, the antibiotic.
Okay, hello, someone speaking. Could you just let us know who's speaking and what facility you're from?
The 1 hour prior antibiotic.
You're talking to each other.
That is a huge initiative.
Hello?
Getting on board with that because...
Excuse me. The hospital is just talking to each other.
But it's not
and your phone is not on mute. Okay, so why don't we get started talking about some of these measures? So anyone on the line, maybe Montefiore Hospital could start. Do you collect the data on maternal deaths, maternal ICU admissions, uterine rupture, hysterectomy, fourth degree perineal lacerations? Montefiore?
Yes, we do.
Not fourth degree perineal, not fourth degree laceration.
Okay, so what do you collect data on as far as maternal outcomes? Maybe you could just review what you collect data on? Is anyone collecting?
Yeah, Harry, this is Anne at St. Charles again.
Okay, hi, Anne.
Hi, Anne.
We belong to the National Perinatal Information Center, and we collect data on number of C-sections, primary versus repeat, the coded reasons for the sections, operative vaginal deliveries, third and fourth degree lacerations are included in that, perinatal data as well, so information on neonatal mortality, shoulder dystocia, obstetrical trauma to the baby, subdural hematomas, that sort of data we collect through the National Perinatal Information Center. It is done retrospectively. None of it is really done concurrently.
Is it done through chart review, Anne?
They do it through the data that we submit through birth certificates and
so
through
delivered.
Our billing. So it's done through medical records.
Okay.
Hi, this is Mark Rosen from St. Barnabas. I don't know if I can Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Mark.
As you guys know, we sent you over our adverse outcomes index that we are doing, which is similar to the sheet that we're all looking at now. And what we do is we do it concurrently at the time of delivery, and then we add to that with further details if other details come to light during the hospital stay. And what happens is after every delivery, the delivery provider fills out this form. It's a checkbox form that includes maternal death, intrapartum or neonatal death less than 2,500 grams, neonatal admission to the ICU at greater than 2,500 grams if it's for more than 24 hours, neonatal APGAR is less than 7 at 5, maternal transfer to the ICU unplanned or planned, maternal transfusion before or after delivery, perineal laceration, third or fourth degree, ruptured uterus, return to the OR with specifics if that happens, birth trauma with specifics, and then there's a space for other, and then there's a box for none. So that way we have a good denominator, and we instilled that about a year ago, and we have much better reporting now. And we think that we can actually look at what our outcomes are and compare to the number of deliveries of all those aspects.
Mark, two questions. This is Lorraine Ryan. What's the time frame that you give the provider to complete it by, and how do you follow up if it's not completed?
They do it immediately after delivery. We actually have a delivery packet, which I'm sure most other hospitals do now, that include the delivery worksheet and our post-op order sets and other things. So it's all kind of together. It's packaged in a folder, which makes it very easy. When you finish your delivery, everyone does it. So we actually have very good compliance, but what we do is we go back and we look at all our deliveries, at our delivery log, and make sure that we have a report for every delivery. And then these forms are also available in the postpartum unit and in the neonatology and nursery units, so that if something that was not found at the time of delivery comes up, then just a duplicate form would be filled out, and then those would be reconciled later.
So you're getting that off of the birth certificate work booklet pretty much that they have the physicians fill out?
No, the physicians are actually filling it out at the time of delivery.
Right. So, like the birth certificate, we have a similar form, maybe identical form, that's part of the birth certificate work booklet that the physician fills out, but we don't have anyone available to concurrently, I guess, collate that data for us. That's why it all ends up being put through the medical records and then goes through NPIC.
I mean, certainly, you know, a lot of this information is redundant from the workbook that the state collects, that our city collects, but we don't really have good access to that data. This is filled out by the provider at the time of delivery, and it's a checkbox. You know, there's a lot of resistance, obviously, to any other additional pieces of paper that need to be filled out, but that was passed over relatively quickly because it's just so easy to do, and 99% of the time, hopefully, you're checking off none and you're done. You put a patient sticker or a patient label on it, you check off none, you sign it, and then we have our denominator. And when there's something that's going on, we know what's happening, and we can look at our outcomes in that way as well as our birth log.
Right. Two things, Mark. First off, would you be able to share your package with us?
I did. You have it somewhere, but I'll send it to you again. Sorry, that's us.
And secondly, what do you do with that data after you collect it?
Well, that's a good question. what we're doing, we have a steering committee meeting, and we look at our data quarterly. But we really, what we want to do, our next step would be to take this and actually compare it to some standard. You know, we're just comparing it to ourselves, and obviously every hospital is different. But we want to be able to compare it to some standards to see if we're falling off what the standard practices are. That's why I think, you know, with this collaborative, if everybody was doing something similar to the extent possible with the hospital differences, that we could at least have a point of reference of how, you know, compare ourselves to some benchmark. But we haven't figured that out yet. So what we have is our reporting tool, but we're looking to develop our index, you know, vis-a-vis Sachs's articles from Beth Israel and
right.
The rest of that literature.
Is there any sort of verification of the data? You just accept what's filled out. Is there any checking on the credibility?
I can't tell you. You know, there is, but it's not as formalized as it would be, and that's just due to resources. I mean, we also, you know, like every other hospital, I'm sure, in this consortium, we also have a birth log, and we look at all of our outcomes. We have an M&M, and we're reviewing. So, you know, hopefully if something adverse is picked up there, we make sure that it's covered here, but I can't tell you that it's a perfect system at this point.
So are you looking at frequency at this point of any of these outcomes?
Yeah, so basically we're looking at frequency. The other thing that we do from a hospital standpoint is if there is an adverse outcome, it goes over to our risk management department as well. So we keep it on our file, and a copy gets faxed to them.
Any reaction to that from those who are listening who are doing something similar? Or
Mark Callahan from FOJP.
Mark.
We're collecting the adverse outcomes index, or getting ready to start collecting it, I should say, for our FOJP hospitals. But what we're also doing is collecting a fair amount of predictor data, because the one that we've our impression is it's a useful set of outcomes, but it's not risk adjusted, and the risk factors are different across the institution. So what we're hoping to do, we have an adequate sample size, is to be able to look at some developing some risk adjustments for this particular data set.
And Mark, how does that actually work? What's the time frame with which you get the information?
Right now it's going to be retrospective chart review, and people from my staff are out there to do this as part of our whole quality and guidelines initiative. And some of the data can come electronically from some of the institutions. Some of it requires chart review. So we're doing it retrospectively.
Is there any internal review of that by the hospital at this point? Or is it all being done at FOJP?
We're doing the data collection analysis. They're going to be getting all the data. We're just starting at this first quarter 2008. And it will all be provided to the hospitals and to the chairs and to the staff.
Is there a data instrument extraction tool that?
There is. It's fairly extensive, and the way we've set it up is that we have it on a web-based data set so that the data can be entered electronically and then goes into a database here for analysis.
I'm not sure if you've seen the IHI tool. I think it was in the packet that was sent out, but perhaps and not now. If there's anything that you have that is not on this tool, if you could potentially share that with us so that we're to be sure that we're not missing anything.
The thing that we have that isn't in these tools are the predictors. You know, a lot of the both patient demographics and clinical risk factors, prenatal, those tend not to be in most of these, which is why there's no real way to do any risk adjustment in these tools. They only have the outcomes and the process measures.
Thanks, Mark.
A question from New York Hospital, Queens.
Hello, Mimi.
Hi, Steve Schuster here. Mimi's here, too, with us. How are you?
Good. Anyone else with you?
We have a team of about a dozen people here today, yes.
And Michelle Williams.
Our chief of nursing and our nurse managers, our perinatologist. We're anxiously listening. I have about a dozen questions, but I'm going to cone them down to two areas of interest. The adverse outcome index has been always very attractive to us. But the initial studies were done at Beth Israel Deaconess through Dr. Sachs, Dr. Mann, and their group, and they came out with data that was very, as I say, seductive. They then, to their credit, followed this up with about 8 or 10 other hospitals, which were in their conglomerate of hospitals, their network. And those hospitals were which were not the academic centers, shall we say. They did not have that support that the academic center had. And the data from those in terms of outcome and participation in terms of team training and the like was not as positive. And they put that forth. And this points up to us what we think is one of the major areas of concern of ours, and that is the incorporation of voluntary attendings into the process. The data becomes skewed if you don't get them all into the process, obviously, and the outcome becomes less beneficial when you don't get them into the process. So that's one of our real concerns. In regard to other matters that have to do with these tools that are used, I would simply mention that there is concern, and I ran it by some of the people sitting at the table and one of the administrators who was here, about the retrieval of this data with some of these tools could be quite anxiety-provoking. For example, the perinatal trigger tool, where the question is, we're not interested in anything but whether there was a negative result, a harm to the patient, at least initially, and then we pursue that based upon the evaluation. Should any of this material be retrievable or actually accessible, then we're really in a situation where people are not going to want to provide this information. And I would ask how that's been handled. And lastly, I think many of us, even though the survey has not been as expeditiously responded to as it might have been, we're interested in seeing where our group may be going in terms of subsequent follow-ups for team training and EFM monitoring studies and, courses.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. And we will get to upcoming training. We'll talk a little bit about that. But we don't want to invest in all that training unless we see everyone's responsive to at least getting baseline information in. And we do recognize the challenge with the attending physicians, and I think this is part of the culture of safety. If they're not engaged, hearing this over and over again, and they cannot fill out the survey, but yet they're practicing and we're allowing them to practice in our hospitals, we need to, as administrators and as organizations and nurses and clinicians, figure out how we move this forward so that we do change the culture. That's the whole overall objective of this collaborative, is to improve the management of labor and patient outcomes.
Yeah, and also, Steve, in terms of how the adverse index fits into the picture of the whole push for patient safety, I think that has to be well explained up front so that this, what can be seen as collection of negative indicators, can be put into context of the entire program. You're collecting this information to achieve a greater good, and you're not only looking, I mean, this particular document or whatever we choose or you choose is looking at negative outcomes, but that's put in the context of where are you going with this information? What are you going to do with it? How do you use it in terms of quality and process improvement?
Oh, I don't think that, I'm sorry, I spoke imprecisely. I don't mean that this data is not accessible to us. I meant that some of the tools that are being used may be not as defined as a part of the quality assurance program as others, and there's some room for slippage, and I've just expressed some concern about that. That's
all. We want your input into how the tool can be best designed to sort of cover both of those bases. I mean, obviously, all of this, your participation in this collaborative, should all be a formal part of your quality improvement program. I mean, somewhere in your QIPI plan, your participation should be mentioned so that all of this is seen as protected information with the goal of enhancing patient safety. Other concerns or back on the discussion?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, it's Phyllis Cohen from LIJ with a whole group.
Hi, Phyllis.
How are you?
Good. Happy New Year.
You too. A few things. We do collect the data. We collect all the elements listed in your draft every week, and they're reviewed every month in a forum, and then it's brought to the practice committee to look at whether there's something that we can look at in terms of process or practice or protocol. The cases are actually reviewed by an interdisciplinary team to look at whether a best practice was used in those cases and whether there was some kind of departure. The other thing that we wanted to share is that the birth certificate database collects a lot of this information, and there are queries that you can easily get from that data system that will provide you with this information. And the New York City database has just gone up January, a new one. It's actually internet-based. And you can get queries off of that. And the statewide perinatal data system also have queries that you can get most of, if not all, of these data endpoints from that data system.
Do you use that to feed into your system?
We do that. We query the state system, the city system now, and we look at our internal data and we make sure that they match, obviously, because that's really important in terms of quality, and we do use that data. And we're all doing it, and we might as well use the queries that are out there and have been created.
So it sounds like a great validation tool.
Yes, and if you do not know how to get the queries, we can set up a discussion in terms of how to get them. The state and the city have people who can help, you know, walk you through the process. The city was really behind in terms of the system, but as of January 1st, it's now all internet-based, and they did have an educational series on how to query the data.
That's very helpful, Phyllis. Maybe for the next call, if someone from the state or city or both are available, we could make that one of the topics that's for discussion.
Well,
Is anyone else using the system and optimizing the query features in it for validation purposes or other purposes?
Just to mention, Steve Schuster again, that's very attractive if we could get some further information about that.
And we will definitely take care of that for you.
Thanks much.
Or we'll do a workshop here. Whatever way is most beneficial to everyone in the group, that would be fabulous. Thank you for that information, Phyllis. That was very helpful. Phyllis, could I just ask you a question? When you do your monthly review, do you have a certain template or form that you follow through for basically root cause analysis or looking at documentation, standardized nomenclature, checking whether rounding was done and all the documentation was in the right place?
Actually, we just created those. Dr. Fleischer worked on them as well, and he actually just got pulled away for a clinical matter. But on different endpoints, for example, if it was postpartum hemorrhage, when reviewing the chart, things like was this patient identified as at risk for hemorrhage prior to the event? You look at what was the hemoglobin hematocrit at the time of transfusion or how much blood loss was there at the time of surgery. Those kinds of things are all kind of, it's like a trigger tool almost as well, that are all looked at at the time the charts are reviewed. In addition, what we recently added, because we really think this is important, is that we look at the events on the unit at the time the occurrence happened. So we would look at the number of cases that were going on simultaneously, the number of patients that came through triage during that same time frame. So, for example, at one of the recent cases we reviewed, within an eight-hour window, there were 12 cesarean sections done and 20 patients came through triage during the time the event occurred. So it gives a context to what happened at that time. We also, which is really interesting and it goes to communication, started to count the number of handoffs in the medical record for that case. How many times did the care get transferred for this patient during that event? Which goes to communication.
Fabulous data. Thank you, Phyllis. I think between Lorraine Hillary and I, we have a lot of...
I'm on a conference call.
Who's ever typing, maybe put the phone on mute. Hello? Okay, operator, why don't we put all the callers on mute? Any other comments before we do that? Okay, so just so you're aware, as the next step, we will investigate the birth certificate database process and either set up an online training or in-person workshop with the state and the city. We will try to get copies of everyone's data collection forms or review forms to share it, and we will post that up on the Jenny. So that takes us right into the Jenny website update and content. And Hillary, do you want to just review that again and how to log in?
Sure, yeah, because a few people have been calling us asking how to log in, and just the URL to get onto the site is simply jenny.ipro.org. Don't include the www dot before it. It's just jenny.ipro.org, and then you'll see the content, and then you're going to see a link to the Perinatal Safety Collaborative. When you click on that, you're going to be prompted for a password, and all you have to type in is the word, it's only one word, hospital quality, so all one word, lowercase letters, and you'll be able to get all of the content within the Perinatal Safety Collaborative site. So, and all the conference call recordings are up there now. Some of the forms that we've been talking about are up there. So it's just hospital quality, and it's all one word, lowercase letters. If anyone has any questions about it, we've gotten probably a few inquiries about it, and I've walked them through how to get on it, but if anyone has any questions or problems, just give me a call and we can help you.
Any questions or comments on the Jenny?
Oh, we have them off.
Oh, everybody's off now. Operator, if you want to open up the line.
If you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. And we have a question from Mark Rosine. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. One of our fancy providers right now just signed on to the website on her Trio, and it's asking for a login as well besides the password.
You don't need that. You or we can register each individual person, but once you're on, you can see everything.
So you don't need a username. You just leave that blank and you fill out the. I'm not looking at the website.
Yeah, you don't need to fill that in.
But they need to be pre-registered, right, Hillary?
But they don't have to be to view the content.
Okay.
And just about the earlier conversation, you know, these the workbook that just came out. It just came out on January 1st. And I think it's just, my understanding is it's just New York City. And a lot of the people that are participating in the collaborative are in New York State, but not New York City. I'm not sure if the state is using the same workbook, so that's something to look into. But I was impressed. I mean, it's far superior to the prior workbooks. And as I was looking through it, and I haven't had time to go through it really, really thoroughly, a lot of the points are the things that we already have on our adverse outcomes. And the idea of being able to query would really, you know, redundancy, I think, is probably the enemy of getting this process going.
Right.
So to be able to bring it all together would be tremendous at using the queries on that. And then the final thing, just in answer to the question that was asked about our adverse outcomes and how we're using it, I mean, we just started doing it a year ago. So what we have seen in looking at our adverse outcomes is we were able to identify some problems, in particular our frequency of transfusions, just by looking at our raw numbers. But our hope is that going forward, at least within ourselves, we'll be able to look at our trends. So we need a baseline or a benchmark as well, you know, to compare ourselves with similar hospitals. But at least being able to look at what happens from quarter to quarter, we'll be able to identify problems as they're happening and improvements as well.
Right, and I think the information provided by LIJ in terms of looking at the environment on the unit, what else was happening, how many admissions, you know, what the staff were actually putting up with beyond just that particular case is really, really useful.
I totally agree.
We will do our homework on the New York State versus New York City birth certificate data and how that can be most useful to everybody. That's a great point.
Okay, so moving forward, we'll continue to use the Jenny. We'll be posting more information up there. Hillary and I last week worked on a framework for the collaborative, and I think you just received that email today. And this is just helping us as an organization trying to conceptualize what's going on in the collaborative and what needs to be done. But it's also hopefully a framework for each of you in the collaborative to better understand all of the details of the collaborative. And I just want to reiterate that we have a perinatal advisory panel. We will be meeting again next month at some point. We have not confirmed the dates. And that panel will be working with us to help put together standards and protocols for things such as shoulder dystocia, maternal hemorrhage, and other complications that into the group.
Yeah, working off existing specialty society. I mean, this is really going to be coming from the physician specialist, so we're not reinventing anything, but we're helping get the word out. I mean, just for example, ACOG has a hemorrhage protocol, as you all know. It's currently in another iteration in draft form, but according to ACOG, it's very underused around the state, so hopefully the collaborative effort and your participation will help make something like that more visible within your organizations, and it certainly can be customized to whatever goes on your individual units, but it serves as a basic framework for dealing with the patient with hemorrhage. And that's just an example of how the advisory panel can help guide the clinical aspects of the collaborative.
And each of those protocols that they eventually adopt or recommend, you could then utilize as one of your tools when you review the cases to see where was each step in the protocol followed, and if not, why not. The second box on the grid is education and training, and this is where we're going to finish up today. As you know, we've been speaking about additional educational and training sessions. We've been back and forth in discussions with Dr. Leonard and Lorraine and Hillary and I just talking about what is the best way to proceed moving forward. We have a potential call with Dr. Leonard today or tomorrow. We're playing phone tag. But we're asking him to do similar to what we did at the kickoff, but much more focused so that the AOM session is very much crew resource management. We will be asking, we will not have an open forum as we did have at the original kickoff, but we will be asking hospitals as teams to come together, and each session may consist of 3 or 4 hospitals at a session.
Where you could send a team of up to, what, 10 individuals?
At least 10 individuals, hopefully more. And then the afternoon would be electronic phenol monitoring education and training, but integrating the crew resource management concepts into that training. What we'd like to do is have these sessions more regional. I'm hoping that we can identify a location in the Bronx, a location on Long Island, and use our facilities here at Greater New York as another location so that we can extend the number of participants from the night staff and other shifts that the staff often have difficulty getting to these trainings. So any ideas or thoughts that any of you have, if your hospital has a great facility for training, we'd love to be able to utilize that facility. And any ideas on what you want to see in the training that would benefit you would be very, very beneficial, because Dr. Lennon is more than willing to customize the training to meet the needs of this particular collaborative. And we, as an the leaders in the collaborative, want to make sure we meet all of your training needs. We're looking to start these sometime in February. We want to be respectful of your monthly schedules, and we know you put your schedules out a month in advance. So I'm hoping to have some dates by tomorrow.
So would they all take place in February, or they would go out?
It would be February moving forward. Any thoughts on the training? Maybe, operator, you could open up all of the lines, and we can get some feedback as to what that training would be, or whether or not anyone has accommodations to host this training. It would have to be large enough for, you know, maybe up to 100 participants at each of the training sessions.
Follow-up question?
I don't think we're going to go. Anybody's going to.
Eve, is that you?
Hi, Steve Schuster. Hi. I was just wondering a follow-up. For those who don't make it to the sessions that we schedule, will there be a web-based backup to these sessions?
Yes, we will do recording of these sessions. From whatever session is done at Greater New York, we will record it, and we can post it up on the website.
Facilities.
No, we have to go to the same
thing.
Standardized protocols.
All right, guys, you're talking to each other.
The concept is really to, you know, we're going to offer these several times. We don't know what the exact number will be to meet the needs of.
She said 25.
Yes, as many as possible, 100 for 4 hours.
But the concept is that you would send a team of staff, you know, similar to the kickoff meetings, but you would really be at these training sessions.
As many as possible, minimum.
Okay, can you hear Lorraine?
Greater New York has sort of a template for doing these team approach trainings, and they've been very successful in the past. So we will, you know, offer as many training sessions as it takes to get people live and in the room. So although there will be, you know, a recorded backup, it's important for you to get key staff to these training sessions once we begin to roll them out. And we will give you plenty of notice so that you can sign people up, and if they can't make a February session, potentially they can be at a March session with other members of the team.
If we want to try to find them, try to get them here,
yeah.
We're going to get much more compliance.
Your phone's not on mute, but can I also say one of the strategies that I have found were very helpful in past collaboratives is if you can find some of your most difficult practitioners, get them to the training. You won't get all your attendings, but if you can find a couple of difficult practitioners training, it often helps smooth the way for the other practitioners, the attendings, to buy into these concepts.
Or let us deal with their yes. contentiousness, or let Michael Leonard really deal with what they consider obstacles to really achieving this culture of safety in the Perinatal area.
Our position is going to go through.
Hey, can everyone hear us? Hillary, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Okay.
But I know there's a lot of interference.
Okay, if someone doesn't have their phone on mute, please do so. Be respectful of everyone on the line so that they could give us some feedback.
On the substance of the
training. Mm-hmm. Does anyone else have any feedback on the substance of the training?
Yeah, on mute.
We're not on mute.
It's okay. Yes, we hear you.
Oh, hi. This is Janet Kelson from the Mitchell Hospital. We would like to offer our Einhorn Auditorium as a training center. It holds about 150 people, and we would like to invite some of our attendings, as you suggest.
Mm-hmm.
We also have another question, though, and this is not related, but it's a question that keeps coming up. We would like to know from other institutions how they are handling the difficult fact of the 39-week induction rule and how they're in rule with private.
I saw the phone. I was wondering.
Oh, my God.
You know what? A lot of people are speaking in the background. We really have to ask you to put your phones on mute and be respectful of everyone on the call. We could not hear your question.
Six, whatever, and they write down a reason why.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you, but people are continuing to talk in the background, and we'll have to ask the operator to cut off their lines. If now it's quiet. Let's keep it this way.
The 39-week, and then that you cut off, so go ahead.
ACOG 39-week guideline. We are asking what other institutions are doing with a private attending population and enforcing the 39-week induction rule. How are they handling that aspect?
Input? Any answers?
Sure. Are the phone's open?
Yes.
Hi, Steve Schuster. The call has to be cleared with the nurse manager and or the chief of the chairman of the department, or the head perinatologist, if there is a resistance on the part of the attending.
And how effective is that, Steve?
That's very effective. Doesn't get done unless they give the okay.
What reason, Steve, be for giving an okay? What are the exceptions?
That depends on the cases. There are certain circumstances whereby the patient has had. I'll give an example. A patient lives far away, and the dates are questionable, and it's within a couple of days. It's usually something of that sort. It's not usually anything that's that goes past elective. There are other things, situations where people will have inductions at 37 weeks, or 36 weeks, or 34 weeks for cause. But you're speaking of elective inductions.
Lennox Hill?
Yes.
So how do you manage the elective inductions at this point?
I don't know whether it's a standard or not. That's always been our thing.
Yeah, I haven't used
it. At this point, we allow the private attendings to book inductions, and we are trying to maintain a 39-week rule, but we are having a little bit of resistance from these attending physicians.
If they looked at, they might be more.
Right. And that's one of the areas that I think as we move forward, once we have all our ducks aligned, all our paperwork in, and we can address this with the perinatal advisory panel and come up with some consensus, then we can move forward on helping you address that issue.
Are the lines open?
Yes, they are.
Hi, my name is Genevieve Securanza. I'm from Winthrop University Hospital. Referring to your inductions at 39 weeks, one thing you could do is if you started to follow your NICU admissions, and if you could track the fact that your NICU admissions will go down, if you adhere to that 39-week rule, that in itself may be enough of a motivation for doctors to follow the rules.
That's a very good
point. Very powerful.
And I think as we move forward and get through the training process, one of the elements that we would like to put in place is physician report card, a scorecard for them to track their own performance on a monthly basis. But we're not quite there yet.
This is Jackie Mullen from Beth Israel.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi. At our institution, the chief residents are the only ones who are allowed to do inductions and C-sections, and if they're not 38 weeks, they have to get permission from the chief of department.
not allowed to do any, they're the only ones allowed to do any, or just those 39 weeks and earlier?
It's 38 weeks and earlier. They're the only ones that are allowed to schedule.
Right, but the attendings can obviously schedule a...
They can schedule. They have to call into the chief resident. And if the patient is not 38 weeks by the time the induction, they will not accept it. The chief of department has to okay it.
So it's a gatekeeping.
Mm-hmm. Another question we have here for at Lenoxville is, when you are booking these cases, who is the person that is actually booking it? Is it an RN staff? Is it the nurse manager? Or, as in Beth Israel's case, is it the residents?
It's the secretary.
I have an RN. This is Dr. Fleischer from LIJ.
Hello.
I think the guidelines on this issue are fairly clear. While we allow elective induction, again, induction without any medical or obstetrical reasons, they have to be 39 completed weeks gestation. So I'm not quite sure why we have to find explanations, reasons, documentations. The inductions shouldn't be booked. Now, at the time of when the patient arrives on the floor, I guess before she's put on the fetal monitor, the IV started, the induction started, somebody always goes through the history, the physical, and ascertains how far along she is. Prior to 39 weeks, it shouldn't be done. I'm not sure we need a whole host of explanations. We're having a similar problem with cesarean sections, but inductions are a little easier in that respect. And I think that that's something that should go as a policy that's consistent with the ACOG's guideline regarding elective inductions.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we'll recirculate that to everybody, but we're assuming that it's
And I guess at some hospitals where you have a predominant population of attending physicians that seem to want to break the guideline, maybe there's an educational session or something that we could talk to our advisory panel about together, particularly for physicians on some of these guidelines.
I don't think it's going to be, if it decreases, it's
going to
be minimal.
Really?
Okay, so does anyone, going back to the training, have any other comments on the training? And if you're not comfortable talking about it online or you have ideas, just send it to us via email. It would be very helpful. We really want to make sure that these trainings meet the needs of everyone in the collaborative.
Yeah, and we'll circulate sort of a proposed program outline, and maybe that would be a better way to get your comments, where we can see exactly how much time would be spent.
Oh. One of the... areas that I'm going to investigate, I've been doing, I know I did it at New York Hospital of Queens, we use the automatic response system. And from another grant, we may have a little bit of funding to purchase that system. And the audience response help may be an interesting way to look at the afternoon session of the fetal monitoring training if we post strips up and people start to see that there's variations in responses to interpretations of the strips.
They won't want to come.
It's just a thought. It's blinded information, but I think it reinforces when everyone thinks they understand what all the strips are and then they actually can use this audience response system, the perception is very different than reality.
Yeah, and just lastly, in terms of the venue of the training, thank you for the Einhorn suggestion, but we're really looking for a room where people can sit around a table and be in a kind of a interactive work mode. So thank you, but we're not looking to have people sitting in an audience for 6 hours, which could be somewhat draining. We really want to get them in a more informal setting. So we have Greater New York. We can rely on that as a backup, but if we can find a venue on Long Island, that would be terrific.
Hospital has a great venue if Jacoby's on the line.
It's here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I thought that I was going to jump on.
So any other questions or comments before we conclude the call today?
This is Lennox Hill. Can you hear us?
Yes, we can.
Okay, the Einhorn Auditorium is just the environment you're looking for. It is not an auditorium with set chairs. It is an auditorium that can be set up to any table configuration, and it is a very relaxed environment.
Oh, great. Fabulous. Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hillary, do you have any other concluding comments?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so the next call is 11:30 a.m. on January 24th. If you have any specific agenda items that you would like to propose for this call, please email us or post them up on the Jenny. We're more than happy to add them onto the call. Hopefully at that time we'll have some updates on the New York City and New York State birth certificate process, and we can provide additional information at that time. In the interim, we have our homework to do to follow up on some data collection forms and other activities, and your homework is to make sure that the application and the other documentation is submitted to us prior to January 24th. We really implore you, please get that in to us so that we can continue to move forward in a positive manner.
I wasn't paying attention.
Okay, so again, try to get your surveys in, and if you have not completed the application, please do so. And thank you, everyone, for your engaging discussion today on the call.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.